The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 17th of February, 2020. On the podcast today, Malcolm Butler, Executive Chairman of Barron Oil. It's Boyle's ticker there. And Malcolm talks about the business and explains what the conditional placing and subscription to raise £2.5 million will be used for. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about advanced oncotherapy, Bidstack, Brave Bison, and Expediator. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see both his lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, and if you did receive an RNS via the app, the Vox Markets app, free to download, and you like the content of that, hit that thumbs up button, and if it's liked enough, it will get into one of those lists, the top 5 or top 10 lists, and I could mention it on the podcast. And of course, those lists again are at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Malcolm Butler, Executive Chairman of Barron Oil, B-O-I-L, or Boyle is the ticker. Malcolm, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome.
That is a cracking ticker. I always think, you know, one of the first things, marketing-wise, you have to get a company to be remembered, you know, and when you get a ticker like Boyle, it's hard not to forget that, isn't it?
It is, yes. I'd like to change it, but...
No, don't change it. Whatever you do, that's a cracking... Don't lance the Boyle. Right, okay. So, Malcolm, for people not familiar with Barron Oil, could you just give us a summary as to what it's all about, please?
You know, Barron's an exploration company that's been around quite a long time, actually. We've been in Peru for a long time, since the 2006 or so. And we have a prospect in Peru, which we're going to drill this year now, out in the Sahara Desert onshore. But our main asset now is something that we've just got awarded, or we're part of an award, and it's something which has caused a lot of interest just recently, which is in Timor-Leste, offshore Timor-Leste, which is a block we've been looking for since 2016, and with Sundagas, and Sundagas has finally awarded it November last year, so we'll talk about that a little bit in a minute. Mm-hmm. And then we also have assets in the North Sea and offshore UK, so we have some interesting blocks in the Moray Firth. We're an exploration company that's kind of becoming an appraisal company now because of Timor-Leste.
Yeah. And news out is you've raised conditionally $2.5 million. Is that right?
That's correct, and that gets us funded through the initial work on Timor-Leste, which is reprocessing 3D to pre-stack death migration and working up the resources there. Where there's also a discovery there at the moment, and drilling the well in Peru. So we're funded for the year.
Yeah. And at the moment, I mean, let's be honest, you're a micro-cap stock, so any material news or anything that happens can really move the stock, and we've seen that in the last few weeks. What you've done, almost 10 bags almost, hasn't it? Come back down, but it's moved like crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and that's partly because we put out some news on what the discovery is in Timor-Leste. It's a slightly difficult thing. We were doing a reverse takeover earlier on the end of last year, and we pulled it at the beginning of this year because it just got too complicated and also too expensive. We ended up looking at spending an awful lot of money on doing a reverse takeover, which we'd be far better off spending putting it in the ground. Yeah. So we agreed with Sundagas to go our separate ways, but we're still partners. Because of that, we would have put a competent person's report out as part of that RTO, and because we didn't put that out, we had nothing really to say about Timor-Leste. So we publicised work that Shell had done when they made a discovery there back in 98 when the civil war was going on and there was no infrastructure and everything else. But they made a very significant discovery there, and that, of course, caused the share price to go shooting way up.
Yeah, well, take us through, what you know. So this is the money, like I said, that you've raised now will predominantly go towards funding this in Peru. So take us through what you know about the prospect there, if you could, Malcolm.
Well, the Peru prospect is one that we've worked up. We shot seismic there in 2015-16, and it's adjacent to a well that was drilled in 1954. Which had a little bit of gas in it and some good oil and gas shows at the bottom. We've got two prospects there, two potentials. One is a a shallower Miocene-Eocene gas prospect, which has got an amplitude anomaly on it, and it's potentially 14 BCF or so. And then deeper, we've got a fractured basement play, which there's a field offshore called San Pedro, which produces from fractured basement here, and it's a very interesting play in the area. Quite difficult to see, but you know, we can see where the top of basement is, and there's evidence of gas chimneys, and there were some gas shows in the 1954 well. So it's an interesting prospect. It's not enormous, but for us, it, you know, can make a big difference. And there's a market for gas there, and of course, there's a market for oil in Peru, and it's actually 1.5 kilometers from the Transandean pipeline, which is quite nice. So that's an interesting prospect. But the really big interest now is Timor-Leste, where Shell drilled a well and put out a report back in 2001 saying that they estimated there was somewhere between 1.3 and 1.7 TCF, trillion cubic feet of gas. Recoverable from this prospect, and there are additional prospects there that haven't been evaluated. So we're looking at getting, they only had 2D, we're looking at getting the 3D, reprocessing it, pre-stage depth migration, looking at comparing it with the nearby fields, which weren't really well known at the time they drilled this well, and basically high grading it and getting ready to drill something in 2021 or 2022 on it. So it's a really potentially very large thing, and we have access to a beneficial interest of 25% on it.
Yeah. And between now and then, what are the news can you know, investors or potential investors expect from you?
Well, the well in Peru is likely to be drilled August September time. Mm-hmm. We are looking at we'll get the 3D seismic in Timor-Leste and work that up so that. We'll get an initial report of the interpretation of that middle of the year, and then towards the end of the year, we'll hopefully be able to get a competent person's report on it with some maybe contingent resources. And in the North Sea, we're looking at the Moray Firth area, and we're going to be working up the 3D seismic on that. We've got some interesting looking prospects, which are potentially quite large. We're looking to farm out in that, so there'll be some news on that, I hope, later on this year as well. So there's a reasonable news flow this year. I'm going over to Ecuador next week, and we'll meet up with our Peruvian guys and hopefully get an agreement signed with a drilling guy over in Peru, so we can move that thing forward. So there's news flow coming up.
Yeah. And what's your general thought at the moment? I know a lot of people sort of quite bearish at the moment on energy and oil and gas stocks. What's your thoughts there?
Well, we have to. In the case of Peru, I suppose you can take a fairly short-term view because they, you know, there's a market for gas there and there's a market for oil. So then, and we're not talking about large quantities of it, so that's fine. Timor-Leste is a different issue. I mean, LNG is awful at the moment, partly because the Chinese, because of the coronavirus, have actually refused some LNG cargoes. But we're looking 5 or 6 years down the road. Yeah. For that, for value, and whether we stay in that long is, of course, is another question. We're looking to see where we can add most value without spending enormous amounts of money.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Malcolm. Well, if someone's listening to the sound of this, liking the sound of the progress you're making here, but are not yet following the story, if you could give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, one is we're going to be drilling this well in Peru fairly quickly this year, and that has a potential to add quite a bit of value. The main thing really is the Timor-Leste asset, which is we've sort of got a tiger by the tail there. It's an enormous asset, and we're a tiny company. And our partner, Sundagas, isn't much bigger than us, you know. So we'll hang on to this as long as we can, and then we'll have to bring somebody in. But you know, this is a very valuable asset potentially. Mm-hmm. And then we also have assets in the North Sea, and primarily we're funded. So we're funded through this year, and we can make these things happen.
Yeah, marvelous stuff, Malcolm. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're Al.
Morning, Jess. We're sitting here in the middle of Storm Dennis. It's sunny, then it's hail, then it's wind, biblical wind, and then back to sunshine again. So there we go.
I know, do you know what? I'm just saying, my mother-in-law came down with my son's cousins on Saturday. They went trampolining outside, flip out one of the centres. Then we went to have a pizza. Then we come back and they were in the house playing. And Monty, my son, who's at six, just came into the living room, really, really just calm and casual. Mum and Dad, yeah, you know our trampoline, yeah, it's not in our garden. What? I just saw you say so casually. I thought he was just joking, you know, because I told him before. But the last storm, apparently, railway network was saying if you live near a railway and you have a trampoline, tether it down because we've had to remove five from the rail line. I said, and I thought he was just messing around because he's heard that. I said, what? Just be silly. So I looked down. It was dark and raining anyway, pretty much all getting dark. And I thought, there's no trampoline, and it's a big trampoline. So you know, it's the biggest one you can get, pretty much. I said, where's it gone? It's gone. I said, oh my God. So I literally run out there, soaking wet, everything like that, and it was over the next door. And I thought, how the heck? Because we've got like a summer house, and that's about so it's 8 foot tall, and the fence behind it is about 9 foot tall. It's gone over that, and this is a massive trampoline. And so I sort of run over there and jumped over there. They'd gone away for the week somewhere, and there was just upturned in their garden, half on their washing line, half on one of their bushes. And I thought, there's no way I can get this back on my own. It's like, there's all I've got is my wife and her mother in the house. I thought, well, how am I going to... So literally, my wife gave this guy Gary a call of the road, and he popped over, and with my wife, we sort of rolled it back to my next-door neighbours who were joining us with a lower fence, then rolled it back to ours. But literally, it was blowing us around like a maniac. I thought we were going to get taken away with it. But I just can't believe... I can't. First of all, I can't see how it got over there, and then I can't see how it even got it back. And it's nuts.
Oh, it's incredible. But I mean, the wind's gusting up to sort of 90, 100 miles an hour. I mean, you know, at that point, anything goes. Mm. And that's roofing tiles, fencing, the whole shebang. And some people down the road from us, they're having new roof put on, and they see if it gets a lot of wind straight off the sea anyway here, as you can probably imagine. And they're kind of horizontally... They're kind of directly onto it, and they're having a new roof put on. So, at the moment, the scaffolding's still on there. Everything's still up there. But, everything's been flapping madly, and there have been bits and pieces flying down the road. So goodness only knows what's happened inside their roof. But, pretty awful.
But it's going to calm down a little bit. But, I mean, where I'm – my parents are not far from where, you know, in South Wales, where the really awful things happening in Rhondda and Garw. And I don't know how people would cope. I mean, this lady said, it started coming in at 2 or 3 in the morning. And obviously most people were asleep. And you had half an hour to get everything, all your possessions that you value, upstairs. How do you cope if you are, like, coming down your house, you've got 2.5 feet of water in your living room, your kitchen. It's just, it takes months, doesn't it, to get back to normal, you know?
And all the sewage and all the stuff that goes with it. It's unthinkable. And you see these poor people up in Yorkshire, it just seems to be happening time and time again, doesn't it? It's,
And they're a catch-22 because they can't get flooded. Insurance. Can't move out because people now will say, "Well, you're in a flood area." So it's just genuinely horrible. And the fact is, I heard that on the forecast, it's going to calm down. But this weekend, it's like bad weather again. And like I was looking out because our patio was kind of flooded. Even I was looking out thinking, the water can't go anywhere. It needs to calm down or dry out for a few days. But these people, poor people in their houses, like I really feel for them. It's be so depressing, wouldn't it? You know.
Well, it is. I mean, all through the weekend, I've been having receiving WhatsApps from a friend of mine who's down in Almeria saying, how's Storm Dennis going? And sending pictures of the seafront at Almeria and up and down the coast, you know, brilliant sunshine, beautiful weather and all the rest of it. So so seriously thinking that,
I'd love to move away for 2 months of the year. And if I didn't have kids school age, I'd do it, I think. I'd just move to just want to Tenerife or somewhere for 2 months, you know, if I could do it.
Absolutely. Seriously, thinking about the next year. I mean, you know, my daughter's getting married this year, and once that's done, then I think we might hightail it. Who knows?
Right, let's look at some bright spots amongst stocks on the stock market. What are you looking at now? What's the news out today?
The main points again. Okay, so I've not spoken about this company for a couple of years, but Advanced Oncotherapy. This Epicode AVO shares have been as high as 52p on the year, as low as 32p. Currently got a market cap of 98 million. So Advanced Oncotherapy, they bought a company that was a subsidiary of CERN. That's the Hadron Collider people in Switzerland, and they developed a light proton beam therapy machine for treating cancer. Long story short, radiotherapy is something of a sledgehammer to crack a nut. Proton beam therapy, there's a beam of protons that goes and deals directly with the tumor. And obviously, when you've got youngsters in particular, we hear a lot about this, this is where the treatments are so much more effective. But of course, it's one thing designing a machine like this. You then got to go through the validation and the verification process, which takes forever. But Harbin Research actually put out a very good note on the company last year, and they said that the light process has been de-risked through validation and verification. They've expanded the technology. They now have flash technology, which can treat patients in a single visit. So, you know, there's no there's no trauma of having to go back for multiple visits. But they've said with the company, so the company's got a market cap of 98 million. It just reflects the amount invested to date, and it doesn't reflect that any challenges, technical challenges the group have overcome, because this is absolute state-of-the-art stuff. This is pushing the envelope, nor the technical achievements. Harbin worked out a discounted cash flow forecast analysis of the Light Machine and AVO as a company, with a net present value of at least 229 pence. And obviously, you know, we've got a chunky market cap at the moment, and you know, investors might be thinking, well, how's it going to get to that? Well, actually, we've made probably a landmark step today in that. The company already have a collaborative research study ongoing with Cleveland Clinic in the US to develop and expand on the proton beam therapy versus radiotherapy. They have a profit sharing agreement with London Clinic. That's the light machine that they've built into the Harley Street premises, profit sharing agreement ongoing. And today they have announced that the Mediterranean Hospital in Limassol in Cyprus is to purchase a light machine system for 50 million euros. So AVO will receive the sale price for that, plus they will also receive a profit share ongoing from that as well. So the technology has gone through that process, and now the sales process starts. And I think we're going to see some real value from this company over this year. I think 2020 is going to be very much AVO's year. Shares are up very strongly this morning, already up 12.5%. But really, as I say, we're just on that market cap of 100 million at around 40p. So if the discounted cash flow analysis reaches in any way toward that 229p, then there is potentially, do your own research, but there's potentially an awful lot more upside to come.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I like the tech here, but this is the thing. You know, tech companies, especially when they're in cutting-edge areas, will spend a lot on research and development and regulation and all that stuff. You know,
it always takes longer than you think.
You're in a new area like this, especially health, you know, when you're messing around with people's, you know, humans, essentially, there's a lot of regulation to get through, you know, and so it's going to be tested upon tested and tested again. And, like, even with, you know, clinical phase pharmaceutical studies going through drugs trials, then it takes a long time, a lot of money, and always longer than you think. But especially when you're in an area like this, never been done before, or that you are, you know, the first in your kind of field, or one of the first. And I think, you know, we've been talking about AVO for years, you know, years and years.
Yeah,
and this is why, at the moment, I'm formulating filters for finding companies, you know, and this is one of the thing. And I often say, if you like a tech company, put it on your watch list. But genuinely, I mean, I'd stay away until there's evidence that they're going to become profit generating. And once they say that once, after many years, then that's when you basically maybe look to invest. Because otherwise, you will suffer years of the price going up and down, boom and bust, pop and drop, and it'll be because they have to fundraise more. Like at the moment, this announcement. I really like this announcement. It stuck out to me. I read it. Right, that's to me the first sort of commercial, sort of proper commercial deal they've done. Now you have to think, okay, $50 million. When will they receive that? Because at the moment it's still burning a lot of money.
It's going to be 2023.
Exactly. They're still going to be loss making for another 2 years at least.
Yeah, still a long way off. I've been looking closely at the Avia since 2013. So it'll be 10 years when I first started looking at the company to the point actually at which they received their first meaningful sum of money as a result of a sale of the Light Machine. But nonetheless, as you rightly say, this is massively important. And I mean, the benefits of proton beam therapy have been well established over the years, particularly with children, youngsters that are growing. The radiotherapy is such a destructive treatment, but obviously it is, as I said, a sledgehammer to crack a nut. Proton beam therapy is definitely the way forward, and it's really exciting.
I used to hold shares in this company a long time ago, a long time ago.
So I'd
given up now. And do you know what? Today, I just hit the follow button on them on Vox Markets here and added them to my tech watch list again. I'm not going to invest in them because I know I just looked. I had a quick look on their financial history, and I think it's that for 6 months, they asked interim results. They lost £11 million. Now that's about 20. There's a £21 million for the year. So they're still burning a lot of money. And I don't know where they're going to get that from. Whether they'll get some short term cash, I have to raise some money. So in my mind, I'm not interested yet until they say with this deal we're going to start being cash generative. I'm not interested because it's going to be volatile till then. They've got to raise money, but I mean it's at $50 million a pop, these machines. I don't know what margin they're making on that, but that's it doesn't take a lot some good money there.
Also, if you look at the trading range of the stock, really for the last, well, since November 2017, the stock has been trading between 50p and 27p, I think is the lowest. So it's very much within its range at the moment. So I think as more sales are made going forward, then obviously we might see it break out of the range. But if you can pick up the stock at the lower end of that range, so it's between, 32p, the stock's only trading at 40p, if it dips down again, then that would be a good entry point. And possibly at some stage the company might even start paying a dividend once the sales are made. But anyway...
Now that's way off, surely. I want to start generating cash. They're not generating any cash yet. I mean, if you look at their last set of interims, there was no revenue, just 11 million losses. So they need to start generating cash. Then they need to get over that, 20 million they're losing. So they need to start earning 20 million at least to start covering that cash burn. So
And there will be more fundraising along the way, there's no doubt.
Yeah, but it's one for your watch list. As I said, put in your watch list, keep an eye on the news, just keep up to date, do a passive sort of interest in it. But to me, it's passive interest at the moment, so I'm not going to go any further than that. But one to keep an eye on. Cool, what's next, Al? Anything?
Okay, Bidstack. I want to talk about Bidstack. Of course, you and I have just...
Do you know, Bidstack, it's in an area that's, cutting edge. And that's why it's going to be volatile. You're going to see these pop and drops, these boom and bust cycles, which we've had. It went from 6 pence up to almost 40 pence, come back down now because, of course, the adoption of revenue is taking longer than we think. They've missed their targets, but there's still potential in Bidstack, a lot of potential here. It's a massive market. There are big companies involved in that market who want to monetize every section, every area of their involvement in the gaming industry. So while it still has lots of potential, for me, again, I'm standing back until we see some kind of hint that they're getting towards a revenue generation first, then secondly, generating actually positive cash flow. So I'm still watching it. I still like the stock, but at the moment I hold no position. But I once they start getting that commercial traction, I'll be probably back in.
Well, I think, I love the technology, love the idea. I think there are, I've had long discussions about this, and I think there are sort of questions over if you're playing a game, how much notice are you going to take of the advertising around you? But I think from a branding standpoint, so if you've got a big brand name like Coca-Cola or O2 or whatever, it's a great platform. It's a great platform to impart a subliminal advertising message. But certainly on the trading front, I think the company has learned some pretty hard lessons over the past 6 months, but nonetheless, revenues of 150,000, a loss of 5.5 million, assets of 3.5 million. They don't expect a significant advance in those revenues in the first half of this year. But they said in the trading update that, that they expect a material improvement in revenues in the second half of the year. Mm-hmm. So the great thing is it's progressing, it's being tested. But also they have a huge advisory committee too. I mean, these are big hitters in the industry, and they announced another appointment as well to the advisory committee, a guy called Andrew House, who basically has driven the growth of Sony PlayStation over the years in the US as well. And you know, these are key figures in the gaming industry. You know, that's an industry that's worth multiple billions, and these guys are involved because they see huge potential. And you know, for the major advertising networks out there, this bid stack will bring a whole additional dimension to that marketplace. So there's huge potential here going forward. I think it's just there were issues last year with perhaps expecting to run before they could walk. But certainly the announcement that they made regarding the numbers reflected that. And I think they'll be more cautious going forward. And my hope is that they will under promise and over deliver.
Marvelous stuff. Cool. Anything else, Al?
Yep, a couple more for you. Just wanted to another technology company that we've spoken about before, a company called Brave Bison. Brave Bison are engaged in social media, and they provide technology and video across channels. They've got clients including Shell, Slash Football, Rebel FC, Utilita Energy, and that they are a massive digital publisher, or at least they were until Facebook changed their advertising rules and their policy for advertising late last year, and that badly hit the company. Having said that, the previous CEO, Claire Hengate, left. Kate Burns came in the middle of last year, and the company have really been engaged in a consolidation process and a refocusing, not necessarily pivot, but certainly a refocusing into other areas. And they announced last week that they'd launched a product called Slick on Snapchat, and they basically reached out and got in front of 40 million viewers in less than 2 months. How they're going to monetize that isn't yet clear, but nonetheless, the share prices popped up last week on the news and has stayed at about 1.3p, market cap of 8 million. So there's not a huge amount of spin and froth in that market valuation at present. Company again, you know, more key another key sort of key person coming into the company. They've announced this morning they've appointed a guy called Matt Lee. Was it Matt Lee? No, it was Matt Bruce. That was it.
Bruce Lee, I'd say.
Yeah, Bruce Lee, that's right. No, it was Matt somebody already. Anyway, they've appointed a guy who's the outlier chief ops officer, and he's basically developed relationships with Guardian, BBC, Vodafone,
Matt
HBC,
Law, laying down the law. Yeah,
Matt Law is laying down the law. So a key person has come on board as an exec to help the group expand, reach new markets, and develop. So that's a good thing. Again, you know, penny stock, very much a technology punt, but I think the company have changed direction, and it seems to be sort of starting to yield fruit, as it were.
Yeah, well, to me, again, we need some transparency in the figures, because, like I said, they started to get on course, on track with Facebook and the advertising model, but there's nothing unique there. All they're doing is, you know, they're buying up sort of viral videos and putting advertising on them, and so they don't really own anything unique. Now they've got to their own channels. That's the way forward, but again, the adoption of revenue and trying to generate revenue is going to take a while, so even though they had bigger revenue with Facebook, I think they're doing the right thing. They're not relying on, you know, other people's content. They've got their own channels now. So, but it'll be interesting to see what kind of revenue they're getting from this, because that's the problem. It's this transition, isn't it, from that model to this model, the outgoing CEO and Arthur. So I just want to see, you know, where they are at the moment, because at the moment, they're loss making. I mean, that's the trouble. You release a good bit of news. You said that those 40 million views or whatever it was, Snapchat, we have no idea what kind of revenue, because even those figures are massive, you know, we have no idea what kind of revenue. And genuinely, sometimes I'm never ever I can count on one finger the amount of times I've been surprised when a company's revenue has been way above where we thought it would be. It's never normally like that, is it? It's normally way under where we expect it to be. We always, as investors, our hope is always a lot higher than reality, you know? So I would wait until you get the next set of results out and see where it is at, basically. But, we're always disappointed as investors. We always hope for more, you know?
Well, I think that's it. In the market, when, you know, with a small technology company, it never goes in a straight line. I mean, Brave Bison have $3.5 million cash in the bank at the moment. How long that will last is anyone's guess, but clearly once we see news flow that indicates that the group are monetizing the new channels that they have, then that's great, and you know then we can see a bit of visibility going forward, and obviously you can plan accordingly. But as you say, you know, once the revenues are in, if the revenues come in where they say they'll come in, that's fantastic. You know, invariably with technology stocks, it takes longer than you might expect.
So 1st of April, the results are on this. So what are their revenues? So they expect revenues to be 16 million. With adjusted
16 million.
EBITDA loss of 700,000. Okay.
EBITDA loss of 700,000. And that's versus a gain of 800,000. Gain of 800,000.
Again, they're going to make a loss. Be interested to see how much of that cash, that 3.8 million, because they had, that 31st of October, they had 3.8 million in cash. Be interesting to see how much, because that's the key. See, when it comes down to it, just look at the cash flow level. If they haven't raised anything and you just look at the cash level now, that's how much cash they're using. Obviously, go to the cash flow statement, you can see how much cash they're burning. And if they're not generating cash, but they're losing it, then it's not sustainable unless they raise money. So,
That's right. Yeah. And they'll raise money, and because they're not generating cash, that money be raised at a big discount. So down we go again, and it's a really tough circle, really is. Yeah.
Well, I keep saying, you know, I'm trying to write a little bit of a book actually on investing. So it helps me and everything else. I started writing a blog. And I thought I'm gonna make this longer. So I started doing videos and I started using flow diagrams. And I thought, for a long time, I was thinking, why do share prices rise in companies? And When you're in the pre-revenue stage and you're little tech companies, they don't generate any value. So all they rise on is the potential of generating value. You know. So when you see an oil and gas company come up with a CPR, or you get a resource company come up with a feasibility study or something like that, and the share price rises because it shows some big figures in that, essentially they aren't generating any value. The share price rises, yes, but what they're saying is, if we go forward and we get the funding to get the oil out or the mineral out, that's the potential value we can generate via cash flow. Now, if we don't get anywhere near that, or we don't discover that oil, we won't get anywhere near that. So you've got to question yourself, do you invest on the pop and drops, which is at the pre-revenue stage, or do you wait until it's a proven? Because I said startups, you know, when you're a new company, startup is just an idea, you know, and there's many ideas that fail. So the only thing that proves that the idea works is profit. You know, when you start generating proper profit, that proves the idea out, you know, and so you can either get involved earlier on and expect pop and drops, boom and bust, or you can go for a more sustained level where they actually start generating cash and they realize, this is a proper business now, you know. It's generating cash.
Or you invest into a company like Expediator, you know, which is
just generating cash. It's a proper business, you know. It's
the polar opposite. It's the polar opposite of the other companies we discussed this morning. But again, you know, this is a company founded by Stephen Blythe in 1988, and he's been with the group CEO all the way through. Freight Management Services. They built basically a business from Braintree in Essex that now employs over 1,000 people across 9 countries. Massive operations in the Baltic states, Lithuania and Estonia. They've got a massive pallet business in Romania, which is growing growing rapidly. And they also have an express business in Germany and China, you know, which is expected to grow rapidly this year. Also, one of the 90% directors has been picking up shares, a guy called Vim Powells. He's bought over 200,000 shares or 200,000 pounds worth of shares over the past 3 to 4 months. And again, you know, you can see with the recent trading update that they published last week why. Turnover up 19% to 212 million. That's 33 million more than the previous year. Adjusted pre-tax profits of 5 million. And they've still got nearly 7 million cash in the bank as opposed to 3.5 million cash last time around. You know, this is a proper proper business. You know, it's a business that's throwing off a lot of cash. And the shares have popped up sharply since last week. Currently trading 35p, been as low as 19p on the year, as high as 56p. And of course, they fell back sharply last year when the group said some of the revenues would be delayed. But nonetheless, you know, if you get contract delays, then you will see an impact on the share price. But the fact is that underneath it all, there's strong cash generation all the way through. And the same guy's been at the helm since 1988. You know, what does that tell you?
Well, the thing is, I bought in after the... not long after the profit warning, because I looked at the profit warning and thought, well, hang on, there's, as always, the stock market overreacts, you know, people overbuy, people oversell, you know. And Stephen came on the podcast a couple of times and he kept saying he's quite understated, he doesn't shout and, you know, so, you know, we're undervalued. It took me the second or third time for him to come on, for I looked at the company properly and thought, hang on, this is undervalued. I thought, because it was like 30 million market cap, and I thought we're going to be turning over 200 million this year, and they're going to be generating 5 million in pre-tax profit. I thought, put that on a PE 10, which when you look at their growth, it's quite conservative. Their previous year's growth, their growth has been like 40%, 50% the last 3 years. This year's going to be 11%, and that's the lowest ever they've done. And he said it's going to go back to that kind of growth levels next few years anyway. And so they were down at below a PE of 10. So a PE of 10 would be in 50 million market, and they were valued at like 35 million. This is ridiculous. So, and they pay a dividend as well. So, you know,
I was going to say,
they're overly punished for that warning there, but they're still generating cash, still paying dividends, you know.
Well, that's the thing. I think Stephen Blythe would just look at the share price movement as not an irritation, but largely irrelevant, because he knows what the business is doing underneath it. And with the market, you know, if the company's generating cash, you know, it will always find its value. And that's a fact. Whereas, of course, with early stage technology companies, you know, you're trading the rumor and selling on the news in many cases, you know, which is an old market saying. Certainly Expediator, it's the polar opposite of the other three stocks we've discussed today, because they're generating cash. With the guy at the helm since 1988, I think it's a very good long-term hold.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. Cheers for Al, and we'll speak to you next weeky.
Cheers, Jess. Speak to you next weeky.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, Goldstone Resources. Wow, that's shot up in the last few days. Let me just look at the chart on that. Has it come back down and gone back up, or has it just gone back? No, it's, you know, it's got up and come back down a little bit, yeah, but it has done very well the last few days. So it's GRL's ticker up 7.84% today, 2.75 pence. At four, Eurasia Mining. People are following that because it's been suspended and awaiting news, 7.2 pence. At three, Cobra Resources. I've seen this mentioned a couple of times on Twitter, up 24% today to 1.55 pence. At two, it's Sylvania Platinum, SLP ticker there, up 9.8% to up 4.5 pence, or to 53.8 pence. And the number one most followed company is Novasec, and the price is 1.29, and it's up 30 pence, or 30.3%. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Advanced Oncotherapy. Of course, Alan covered that in the podcast. Purchase of Light Proton Therapy System. At four, Lanzan Oil and Gas Directed Dealing. At three, Sylvania Platinum. Of course, just mentioned in the rises there, half-year report announcement. At two, Starcom, updated contract with Zero Motorcycles. And at one, it's Emerson, commencement of socio-economic impact study. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.